Father the Lord. Still, it is kept. And it's frightened and peaceful. So even though the public is very compassionate thing to do, it's still kept. So as far as the precept is concerned, the motive, where it comes from, is irrelevant. But the goal, are you intending to take that life? Or cause that life to be taken?
Is the whole point of this instructing life and just whether it's a sense of self taking a business
meeting? And that's a difficult one sometimes in prison, to get enlightenment. I didn't take that very much. They have to get back. But anyway, that's as far as that precept goes. So, interesting, I hope you get the idea of these precepts. Motive and intention is actually part of Western law as well. You probably remember. And it was very nice and teaching there, and that's also in the Indian legal system, as enshrined in the Vinaya. So when you're looking at the power and quality of an act, where's it coming from? What was your motive? Did you have hate? Did you have delusion? Were you stupid? Were you jealous? Were you greedy? That's where you're coming from. Is that what motivated the act? But it's also what you intended.
Can
you got it very clear. But the Buddha actually is obviously a great psychologist, so you have to understand that the motive and intention separate the two. That's very, very clear in monks' video. And those of you who have become monks, or novices, or monks, rather, you've been taught that, and that makes it very clear about many of the rules that you have to keep. Some, the motive is really important. Some, the motive is irrelevant. It's the intention which is the most important part. What you hope to achieve by that. Obviously, it's not a right thing to do to have malicious speech or gossip or harsh speech, but it's not really concerns those things in the precepts. The precepts is like, literally means like deceiving speech. So is it just telling lies, or is there other things? What about white lies? Is that breaking a precept?
Could be deceiving jokes with intention to...
Deceiving jokes, that's, that's an interesting thing. Now, when is a joke a lie? And when does it break the precepts, and when it doesn't break the precepts? We have to tell lots of jokes.
There is a bad intention behind it?
Yeah, there's intention to deceive. A good example is if you tell like a joke, you know, like the English Irishman Scotsman walked into a pub, or... Those sorts of jokes, straight away when you say those sorts of things, people know straight away it's a joke. So it's not a deceit. So when you tell a story which is meant to be a sort of just a story, then that's not a lie. But if you, there was this, almost like playing jokes on people, saying your shoelace is undone, when it's not. Now that is a lie. And that type of, I'll meet you after the talk, I'll meet you in my hut. And I, just and ha 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 ha, you can wait there all the time. Now that is a lie. That is deceit. That's breaking the precepts. So sometimes sometimes people do play jokes on people by lying like that, by deceiving them. Now that is a lie. But if it's like the joke we're telling the story, have you know heard the one about the the Christian priest or whatever? Then that's not a sort of a deceit, because you don't intend to deceive the person by doing that. So there's two types of jokes. The one which actually deceives a person and you find humour in deceiving them, and there's also the one which is just, there's no intention at all to deceive, which is telling a funny anecdote which is never meant to be true.
But it doesn't include the mental part of the deceitful act.
The mental part, yeah. What happens if you tell a lie, but you thought it was the truth? Is that
deceit? Not a lie.
No, no, it's not a lie, indeed. So you thought it was right. So number one, you have to think that what you're saying is wrong. So what happens if you think it's wrong, but actually turns out to be the truth? If you come along and say, "Ajahn Brahm, I'm enlightened," and you know you're lying,
It turns out actually you are. Have you told a lie? Have you broken a precept?
Yes.
At the moment, you were telling it, yes.
Yeah, that's right, correct. So it doesn't actually matter about the truth of the thing. It actually really matters, you know, actually how you perceive it. So it's your perception of the facts, and you intend to deceive. What happens if, you know, you go along and you know, tell the person sitting next to you, you know, I've had a really good meditation retreat, I can fly through the air. And they know you, say, oh, you're crazy, no way can you do that, I don't believe you at all, no way I would ever believe you. Has he told a lie just because you don't believe him? Has he deceived you?
If you know that it's not true and you still take it seriously, then it's a lie.
That's correct, yeah. So whether you believe it or not, it doesn't really matter. You know, you've made a statement, you know it's not true, and you're trying to sort of deceive a person. Whether you succeed in deceiving them or not is not the point. You've made the effort there. What is important, what happens, you know, if you say that, you know, you can read people's minds, but you say it in Pali. And you say, what? So they've heard you, but they haven't understood it. Is that deceiving?
I don't think
the intention is to deceive them.
The intention is to deceive, and he's actually said something. Mm-hmm. But have you fulfilled? Have you actually told a lie? Have you broken the precept?
If you knew the word that they wouldn't understand, then
actually, to complete the breaking of the precept, you have to have the intention. Then, whether they believe it or not, it's not really important. They have to actually understand it. But they have to have heard it.
It depends if the person knows Pali or doesn't.
Correct, yeah. If they don't know Pali, then you have another life. It's the same in, suppose that you write to your friends, or write to your boss at work. Dear boss, sort of, I hate you, you're a complete idiot, and you know, I just want to be a Buddhist nun for an hour. I'm totally enlightened now. You put the stamp on that, and then you put it in the box down below. Have you told a lie yet? Have you deceived anyone yet? Now, it has to actually, that letter has to be reached them first of all. Before, so they have, it's an important thing for monks, because they have one of the most serious rules of Parajika. If any monk intentionally claims, like a state of supernormal power, like being able to read minds or fly through the air or being enlightened, and they know they're lying, then that is a Parajika offence. It's a disrobable offence. It's very serious. So that's why the books were very clear there. If I sort of, you know, some monk wrote on there that, you know, I can actually walk through walls, and they send it off to the newspaper, and they know they're lying, they're just boasting. And they write it down and put it in the box down there, then they haven't committed a parajika yet. They haven't actually completed the lie, they haven't deceived anybody yet. But actually, if they sort of wrote that and then they rushed down before someone took the post and grabbed it and burnt it, pretty close. But not quite. So the idea is very clear here. You have to have the intention, you know, that you really think you're deceiving someone. Whether it's true or not is not important. You really think you're deceiving someone, you're telling what is not true. And that can be conveyed through letter, through gesture. Is anyone here enlightened? Put your hand up. And if someone puts their hands up, yes, and you know, they're telling a lie, that's telling a lie as well. By gesture or by word. And it has to actually reach the person, be heard by someone and understood. You know, that you are saying that you're enlightened, or you are saying that you can fly through the air. If you say that and it's understood, then the lie has been completed. But if you people don't believe you, that's not really the point.
And then does that only apply to human beings too, or can be daily?
Ha ha! Yeah, what happens if you tell the cat, get Emily, hi Emily, you're very fortunate because you're being stroked by an Aryan. If you say that to the cat or to Hansi, have you told a lie?
No one is around. I'm here.
I didn't understand what an iron is.
How do you know? Because that cat could have been sort of like a monk in its previous life.
Probably an Irish.
It must have been an Anagar because it always hangs around the kitchen.
We've got a few monks on
I think the intention of saving someone's life, you know, knowing that that person will be killed and then so somebody is chasing him and he's gone left, he can tell him when this way.
Yes. Now that's it. That's one of the common things they say. There was a story of like this man who was being chased by the villagers. They thought he'd done some terrible crime, and he met this monk sitting under a tree, and the man sort of climbed up the tree and said, monk, save me out of compassion, don't tell the villagers that where I am, because, you know, I'm totally innocent, but they think I'm guilty and they're about to murder me. And so he climbed up the tree, and then these villagers came with their machetes and said, have you seen this monk, this man who's just, you know, done some terrible crime, have you seen him? We've come to sort of take our revenge on him. Now, if you were that monk, or you were that nun, what would you do? If you said, I haven't seen him, you're committing a lie.
Just close your eyes and intend to meditate.
I haven't seen him in the last minute.
But actually, that was that's actually a Tibetan story. Sometimes, because of Tibetans, sometimes they emphasize compassion more than anything else. They say the monk should lie. But it is a lie. But this actually happened when I say, well, maybe there is much better ways. You don't have to say that. You can make up these other excuses. You know, I can't see any man. There's no man around here. He's up there. I know he's up there. There's no man around here, down here. So sometimes that sort of speech, is that deceiving speech? Is that breaking the precept?
No.
You're telling the truth, that even though, you know, you're intending to deceive them, it is actually truthful, so you really can't get out of that. There's a couple of stories. First of all, the story of during the Second World War, I think this was in Amsterdam, someone told me the story. There was one of the Dutch people there was sheltering some Jewish people in the attic, because they would be sent to one of the concentration camps to be killed. And they were sheltering them there. And a very, very honest and upright man. And when the German Gestapo came and asked, "Is there any Jews in this house?" he was put in this terrible situation. What should I say? Should I lie? Or should I tell the truth? And apparently all he did, he sort of stood there, would not lie. And he said, "Oh, come and have a look for yourself." "Thank you, sir." And they went to the next house. So he got away with it that way. So sometimes if you're very clever and if you have very strong morality, you don't have to break your precepts. There's usually other ways of getting out of these situations, not lying, but also not giving information which will harm another person. There's usually little tricks and ways of doing this. But the other, there was one of the very famous Thai monks. Is actually, here's one of the pictures up in the dining hall where the monks sit, Ajahn Sing Thong. Once he was staying with Ajahn Mun, one of Ajahn Mun's disciples, and he got up late one morning. He overslept and he missed the morning meeting. And you know, that was in those days, that was really, he got blasted for that. And so what he did, he realized he was in big trouble. And he was one of these village kids. He was very tough. So in the forest, there's always like a few forest chickens. He ran around and grabbed one. And he tied a string around its neck. And then he went to the hall, you know, just in the middle of the chanting, dragging this poor chicken behind him. And the reason he did that, because then when Ajahn Mun, after the morning meditation, said, "You were late, you didn't get up early enough." And then he said, "Now it's a Thai idiom. I came before the chicken." He's an idiot for getting up very early. But as soon as he said this, he was a joker. As soon as he said this, all the monks, including Ajahn Mahabua, they could help but just cracking up laughing. And that child's mind was totally disabled for doing anything. He said, "Oh, get out of here." And then Rajab Mahabhu will tell that story. And he said, "Had he told a lie?" Because, you know, he said, "Well, I came before the chicken." Because he didn't track this poor chicken to the horse. And that's just like the tight idiom, so you got up early. So he didn't tell a lie, because, you know, what he actually said was actually truthful, even though that it had a meaning which was a bit deceptive.
And then does it only apply to human beings then?
Well, this is an interesting one, because there was a case of a monk, this was in the monk's vineyard, who was in his heart and he was saying, "I'm enlightened, I'm fully enlightened." Just actually to, you know, see what it sounded like. But there was a deva listening, and actually the deva complained to the Buddha. And the Buddha said, "Monks, you should not do that," and made it a dukkha to offence, an offence in a minor offence in the list of offences for monks. So even actually there may be devas listening. So it's still an offence. But whether it's actually in a lie, making precepts, is a bit, still should not be done there.
I think I've heard it said that one who lies is capable of any kind of wrong. Why is that?
Oh, it's just like honesty. This is the advice to Rahula, when Rahula was very, very young, and the Buddha sort of made the... He got the... I won't do this, don't make a mess. He got the cup and he put all the water on the floor. He said, "No, anyone who lies is as empty of water. This is empty of goodness, as this cup is empty of water." And he did actually say that once you're dishonest, in other words, you're not acknowledging what's really going on, you're in what psychology will say, denial. Then, of course, when you're in denial, you can do all sorts of things and justify it. So, you know, from lying, we get to denying the truth, not facing up to things, not acknowledging the truth. Which is why, especially for monks, you know, whenever there is any investigation about what we do, we're all supposed to just be totally honest and, you know, say what we did. It's a total honesty system in the Sangha, which is a great beauty, but it's also a great weakness. If there is scallywag monks or scallywag nuns, you know, monks and nuns who aren't keeping the precepts, there's not much you can do about it unless they're honest about it and say, "You know, this is what I've done." Okay, it's usually one of those things. It's not a good thing to ask a monk, and the reason is because if the monks who are, they say, "Yes, I am," the monks who aren't say they're not, then we get this elite part of the Sangha and just the riffraff, and it's the rubbish monks. And you can see what would happen, you know, if that got around. "Oh yeah, this monk, yeah, he's a Sotapanna, this monk's an Arahat, this monk's a Srivan, that monk is hopeless, this monk is something else." Then straight away, the lay community especially would treat you very differently. And it's, you know, I made a joke about this, we have what's called the aristocracy in sort of Buddhism. You know, and just like the aristocracy, called aristocracy, then you get this elite. And it's very bad. It means it's conceited, it's not even. And you know, you start having the Aryas having different coloured robes. You know, so patches, that's right. One stripe for Sotapanna, two for Sakadagami, three for Anagami, and you get like little pips or stars or crowns if you're sort of Arahat. And you know, that sort of stuff, it works in the world but doesn't work in the Sangha. So because of that, the Buddha said, "Keep it quiet, don't tell people."
In another occasion, if you are silent, then if somebody asks something, you don't want to lie, but you don't want to...
Well, the best thing to do is actually say what I said. So the Buddha encouraged people not to tell, except your teacher, maybe. And the reason is, because the whole purpose of the practice is to lessen one's ego, and lessen the idea that attainments are personal. And so, really, a lot of times people, if they have attained, they don't even feel inclined to say. It's not just like, you know, that if you're, "I've won the lotto," or, you know, I've got a PhD for double first with honours or whatever. You don't say those things, because that's all about pride and measuring, you know, these five candles in terms of the self. You know, so he can't say himself, you know, that I am an arahat, or I am this. The more times you have this I am, so the less you understand Buddhism. This is why that when the self gets, you know, pretty eliminated, exterminated, that's why that the idea of saying that I am this, I am that becomes meaningless. So it's also one of the reasons why people don't do it anyway. And it just deludes people, it just makes the path look as if it's like a lot of attainments rather than a lot of letting goes.
I think this speech includes thought.
Speech includes thought, not as far as precepts are concerned. So you go around thinking, I know, I know, I know, I know. You know you're not, but it's just nice to think that way. Then that's not making a lie.
Just if you know that somebody has said a lie and that something bad going to happen, and if you say something, you can make it different, but you can also stay quiet. In such a case,
this is where you have to make your choice what to do. That's where you can't give a blanket in. So as long as your intention is good, you check your intentions to make sure it's coming from good places, and then you do a good act. But if there was a case where a person did tell a lie in order, they thought it was going to really help somebody, it might be that case of the person who was going to be killed, and you say, no, there's no Jews in my house, or, you know, that person, I haven't seen him. You do tell a lie. It's what in Buddhism we call not just a black karma, black and white karma. So it's a karma which is not just, you know, bad, it's not just good, it's got both of it. So understanding the law of karma means that sometimes it's got both the good and the bad. It's good because, you know, you were acting out of compassion and kindness, you were thinking of trying to save a person's life, but it's bad because you're deceived. So that's, the Buddha said that, there is such a thing as not just white karma, not just black karma, but black and white karma. It's got a bit of each of it.
So is this that you met after that global Buddhist conference? Some people were asking about the precepts and you were saying four things to check and make.
That's right, yeah.
You do make a bad karma, but it's still good.
Yeah, it is still bad karma, but it's also some good karma as well. You do too. One act has two parts to it.
What if you like speak quickly and only while you speak, or when you hear your own words, you realize that it's not true?
Very good. It's not lying. Because for the monks rule, they make it very clear, they call it Sampajana Musawada. And Sampajana means actually with no full awareness. And this is described very well in the Vinaya. It says, you know before you're speaking, I'm going to lie. As you're speaking, you know, I am lying. Afterwards, you know, I have lied. You need all three there, to be a full lie. Now, if you are speaking, and as you're speaking, well, this isn't true, but it's just come out, you made a mistake, and after say, I've lied, but I don't want to tell anybody, that's not a full lie. So you haven't broken the precept there. So obviously, it's and the one thing to do is, oh, so I made a mistake there. But it has to be really intentional. Basically, just premeditated. Mm-hmm. I'm going to lie. Then you lie, and you know it's a lie. And afterwards, you know it's your blood. So there's the three parts to a lie. Just before, during, and afterwards, you know it's a lie. So that means if it's rush speech, you say something, then you know, you're meant to say that, you know, well, no, I'm not enlightened after all. But then you say, well, I'm enlightened, oops, and that's not what I meant to say. But then, you know, you thought, well, I'm not going to disappoint people. Then that's not the full life, because you never meant to say it, even though you think, oh, okay, I'll handle that.
Well, the point of that precept is sort of like train mindfulness and like true perceptions.
It's one of all precepts are supposed to encourage mindfulness. It's the mostly with the precepts is to discourage harm. Harming to yourself or harming others through deceit.
Is that harm in terms of maybe the tendency to follow that one way and also the karmic effect?
You see, obviously the growing that tendency of deceit, but it's also just harm the person just straight away. And if I lie to you, and I say I'm going to see you in my hut afterwards, and sort of no way I'm going to see you in the hut afterwards, if I lie to you, then that hurts you. It's one thing to do. Actually, another part of the lie precepts is if you break promises. So if you promise to do something, I'll bring you a cup of tea at 4 o'clock in the morning, because I know you're very tired and have a hard time getting up at that time, so I'm going to bring you a cup of tea at 4 o'clock in the morning. And if I say that, I have no intention of doing it, then that's a lie. If I say that and I really have an intention, I want to, maybe your birthday tomorrow, give you a cup of tea 4 o'clock in the morning for your birthday, then I sleep in myself. Oh, I missed that one. That's not a lie. You have no intention of breaking the promise. And it's one of the reasons why that monks shouldn't make promises very easily, or even anagarikas. Because if I make a promise, then I'm obliged to really try and keep it. I put a huge amount of effort, much more than any layperson would do, to actually keep that promise. Because of it's breaking your lying precept. If you disregard a promise and say, it doesn't matter, who are they? That is deceit.
So it's like a promise is to say, I will do this.
That's right, yes. A good example is, I think, when are you coming to Sri Lanka next? Can you come and visit Sri Lanka? And if I so promise, I'll go there maybe the end of the year or next year. And if I say that, I have to go at that time. So I don't say that. I've got to be careful to say, look, it's a bit difficult. I have to think about it later on. Even if I say that, I have to think about it later on. So I promise something.
And how do you get out of promises that you have made when you are not very mindful?
Then you have to tell that person. Look, I'm sorry, but I really intended to sort of get to Sri Lanka at this time, but it's just too difficult for me. Please, is that okay? Well, please forgive me. So, you have to sort of find that person and unwind the promise. It's a beautiful way of doing things because it takes your ethics to a higher level. If you promise to do something for somebody and find out you can't do it, you let them know.
Yeah, it's really the delusional quality of lying is very profound.
It is indeed, yeah. And it's also just the lack of respect to yourself and others when you deceive a person by making promises you don't expect to keep.
Promise to do something at the time you don't realize it's going to harm you, but then later on you realize. But then when you speak to the other person, they wouldn't take it, so they want you to do it because of the promise. In such a case,
then usually I'd probably try and do it.
That's
right, yeah. If I promise someone to go to Sri Lanka, I know she should have done this. So I'll get caught in that many times. Going to sort of Dana's going to do this, and so we come to this funeral, or can you do this, and write me this letter. Because of kindness, and maybe just tired, and say, okay, I'll do that, and think, I shouldn't have done that. So, okay, you just go and do it. So, what it teaches you is to not make promises heedlessly.
Once I went to the doctor, and the mercy officer gave me an induction exercise.
Yeah.
Where I stayed with the, I spoke to the doctor and he told me everything about my treatment, and I think the doctor said it's actually preparing for surgery, not for simple treatment. And I signed it, although I didn't speak to the doctor, just because lots of people were waiting, and I think they wouldn't have liked it if I said, I want to actually speak to the doctor first.
Yeah.
For a
time.
So, I mean, it's a lie.
It's a lie. That's a terrible thing that people make you do that. It could be anything.
Yeah.
So that's why I can say, I'm not going to read it if I sign it. Sometimes people have done that. It was a long time ago. I imagine Sumatha was saying that one of the monks in Thailand, her visa had expired, and the people in the visa said, sign this. And said, you can't do this. And you can't. So I think they're trying to backdate the application. Come back, it's lying. And the visa officer said, that's the only way we can do it. You're causing us a lot of trouble. We'd get you out of the problem, but we have to do it our way. I think I just got her shoes and I'm not going to lie. So they took it in the back, they did something, it all got fixed up in the end. And they really respected that, you know, the mother was not going to lie. And so sign things as well. Yeah. They stood their ground and they got better respect for it. Yeah. So sometimes it's good to do that, but if for some reason you can't, black and white cover. You try your very best. And try not to put yourself in that situation when you have to laugh. So if you do make a lie, you do break that precept, remember, you don't go punishing yourself and giving yourself 50 lashes. You do 50 strokes of the cat, it's okay. You know what that is. But you acknowledge what you've done, then you sort of try and make amends. And one of the best ways of making amends is don't put yourself in that situation again. I'll get to the doctors earlier or something. What is not
no, I think they do it always, that we just put at convenience.
Yeah, we just say, oh, can I just, you know, I'll sign a few later.
I did read it.
Yes.
It said that the doctor talked to me.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to actually go in then because the doctor was treating other people.
Oh, yeah. We just say, look, I'll wait until he comes out or something. But you know, try and get yourself in that situation if you know that you have to sign something, but you know the signing of it's true.
No, but I don't know that. Not be cloudy in your mind.
What about that? So is that allowed? It's a drug. You're not allowed to have drugs. So what's the answer?
Things that cause heedlessness.
It's what causes heedlessness. In particular, they were calling them narcotic drugs. So narcotic drugs are supposed to make you dull, sleepy. That's why it's called narcosis. So anyway,
the opposite.
Yeah, it's supposed to be the opposite. So apparently, the powers that be said that stimulants are okay, but if it's too much stimulants, especially illegal drugs, like you say, like. Methamphetamine is a stimulant.
Ecstasy.
Ecstasy, yes. But those are the things, because they're illegal drugs, they're certainly a no-no. But it's really just a bit uncertain, because you've got something like betel nut. There's a lot of the monks in Thailand, especially the old monks and divinities, they eat that, also in, I think, Burma as well. And that's illegal in places like Australia. So a lot of times there's a bit of a dodgy line, what's allowable, what's not allowable. And what really is not allowable is like marijuana. If you're in India though, sadhus are allowed to take marijuana. But that's not a good thing for a monk to have. So, an agarica. But the sadhus, they're allowed legally to take ganja. So marijuana, cocaine, heroin, ecstasy, that sort of stuff, that's not allowable for a monk. What about the alcohol? How much is allowable?
Nothing.
No. Nothing at all?
No.
There's alcohol in everything. Tiny, tiny little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can't smell it or taste it.
That's a lie. Mm. But there are such things as low alcohol drinks. And actually they're called non-alcoholic beer. Or non-alcoholic wine. That actually means it's very, very low alcohol. So there's still alcohol in it, but as you said, what the Buddha said, as long as you can't, say you can see it, but I don't know if it's got a colour, smell it or taste it especially, then it's not counted as breaking the rule. You can't smell it or taste it. What happens if they put alcohol in a cake and give it to you to eat? Is that allowable?
Yeah, because it's baked off.
That's the thing, if it's baked off first, it's allowable. You put rum in it.
Vanilla.
That's not. Is that alcohol?
Yes.
Essence. Okay. But if you put it in afterwards, because sometimes people have these cakes and they put the alcohol in afterwards, and that's what they do. We've had that here. So sometimes, but it's very unlikely that anyone will take that because it smells, and many of the monks recognise the smell. And therefore you stop. And sometimes you can actually see it. Be careful what you offer to the monks. I know there was one lady, a couple of times, she bought this dessert and it was only written in very, very fine print, like alcohol in it. So we told her to stop bringing that, like a cake with alcohol, but it'd be put in afterwards, not before. So you've got to be careful there. So if it's alcohol, you can smell it or you can taste it, then it's not allowed. There's something which I know that the monks in England used to use, and even Ajahn Sumedho used to use, called rescue remedy. And that's one of the flower remedies or something. That's right, yeah. But that's actually put in an alcoholic tincture. So are you allowed to put that? So you're supposed to put little drops in your mouth. Is that allowable or not?
For medicinal reasons, it's okay.
No? Even in the vineyard, there's at least two things that have alcohol in it. It's very dilute.
Yes, I am. If it's medicine, it's just a small amount, tidy amount, then most of them might say, okay. But if you get the sort of bar remedies, instead of just dropping on your tongue, one drop, oh, no, no, no. That would not be right. Yeah, indeed, yeah. That's right. But they do actually say if it's the alcohol that's in there to actually, well, it's part of the medicine, but you can't really taste it or smell it, then it's okay. That's an interesting one, because they actually said that they had like pipes in the time of the Buddha, and they said that was okay to have an infusion, a smoke infusion. However, that most monasteries these days say that's not allowable. And certainly Wat Pa Phom in the last few years have been very strict on that. And that's one of the grounds. If an abbot of one of Ajahn Chah's monasteries will see any disciple smoking cigarettes, then that's grounds for throwing them out of the monastery. You can't stay. You can go somewhere else.
In Myanmar, the word for smoking is to eat the cigarette, you see. So a lot of the stricter monks will always say,
eat in the afternoon.
You're eating, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But it's quite common. There's a lot of
monks. You should see the size of those cigarettes.
The cheroots.
Yeah.
Cool.
Actually, there was a while when there was a fad in Wat Pa Phom for about a year. One of the American monks went back to the United States and got all his chewing tobacco. I remember Tennessee Choo Choo was one of his chewing tobaccos. And the monks really got into that. You know, for about a year until the Thai monk said, well, that's going too far. And then they got into snuff. Oh, very addictive. But if you ever see the Thai monks doing the snuff, it was absolutely gross. Because I remember just my father taking snuff, he just put, actually a little impression, it was called the snuff box in anatomy. Put a little bit of snuff there. But these they put it in a pipe. And they put it in a pipe and they blow it up into their nose. It's actually gross. They blow their eyes out. It was really crazy stuff they were doing, but that got banned as well. So every now and again, it's the nature of these things that where there's a loophole, the human beings being human beings, you try and exploit that loophole until it just it goes against the spirit of things and it gets banned. So anyway, that's the alcohol and drugs. Okay, that's enough about that. That's an easy one. So, let's go to the sutta today, the Satipatthana Sutta.